Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Friday, June 15th. Welcome to Fight Night Picks podcast, episode number 19. Another couple good interviews for you. Let's get into it. All right, episode number 19 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. You know, we're brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to their website, firstrow.ca. Use promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouth Guards. Head on over to sisuguard.com. Use the promo code FNP10. You'll save 10% on your order today. All right, so episode 19, like I said in the intro, we've got two big interviews for you. We've got at MMA Kings, Nolan King, coming on to talk about UFC 225, 226, and then also Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series from this past week. Man, barn burner of an episode. And we also have Canadian MMA journalist James Lynch on. And, you know, we talked about the Canadian MMA scene as well as UFC Calgary, the upcoming UFC Moncton event in October. And, how we get a start in sports media. So we might as well just get right into the interview with Nolan. You know, you can find him on MMA Today. He also writes for Flow Combat. He just joined Tapology as well. He's a member with MMA Brazil. So here's my conversation with Nolan King. Yeah, so last night with Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. So they handed out a contract to Menafield. I mean, seems like Greg Hardy got a developmental contract. Is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of one of those terms that's used that we don't really know exactly what the meaning is. There's been a couple of these handed out in the past, the ones that come off the top of my head. Yair Rodriguez, I guess, got one after The Ultimate Fighter, which he already earned a UFC contract. So I know Dana had said that they brought him through the developmental program, which I think essentially means they paid for him to come out and train there. But then you also have, like, the Jessamyn Duke from Ronda Rousey's camp. She went to Invicta on a developmental contract. She never ended up coming back just because she kept losing there.
Yeah.
And then there's been a couple guys that they've done this with as well. Bevan Lewis, who is going to be – Bevan Lewis, who's going to be on the a couple episodes from now in the Contender Series. He was on it last year. He did a similar thing. And, you know, I'm sure there's been a few other people that we don't know about that have also gone through the same program, but kind of a broad term, and we'll see what it means for Greg Hardy. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, an LFA type deal is the one that he gets, just similar to Lewis.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of a tough spot for him where that was pretty much his first professional fight. I mean, obviously he'd fought for LFA in the past on an amateur basis, but yeah, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts whether he sticks around with LFA or it could be something. I mean, I know it was rumored that the next season of The Ultimate Fighter, if there's the next season, that it would be the heavyweights and he could be featured on that as well.
Yeah, you know, it will be interesting. That's actually a pretty solid theory, I think. You know, that would make sense. They did something, you know, they brought in Kimbo Slice for the last time they did the heavyweight season. Spiked ratings, it did really well. I think it was one of the best seasons rating-wise that they've had in their history. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him show up on there. I feel like it's one of those situations where even if he loses in the house, like, you know, they could still bring him on for an actual fight afterwards. Say, oh, he went through the house. You know, that was a two-round fight. He wasn't with his camp. Like, you know, we're going to give him another shot, where nobody would necessarily argue with that based on, you know, if you're talking about his in-ring skills, nobody would argue with that. But yeah, LFA, I think, would be a good move too. That way, you know, he could kind of not be thrown in against a top-tier regional heavyweight prospect. But then again, I mean, he just laid out Austin Lane, who was a guy that maybe he wasn't as developed as some of the other regional heavyweights, but he was a guy that everybody had circled as one to make it to the UFC eventually. You know, he was 4-0, which is four more fights than Greg Hardy had as a professional, and I believe he also had five amateur fights, which is two more amateur fights than Hardy has. So, yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what he's going to do, but he's been, you know, tearing it up, leaps and bounds each fight, and that athleticism in the 265-pound division is scary.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of young guys that are coming up through the ranks, and I mean, when you're talking about Austin Lane, the nine amateur and professional, a lot of finishes there. A lot of people had predicted him to win the fight, and I mean, looking at the odds, they were about even going into that fight too.
Yeah, they were. Lane actually opened as the favorite, and then it ended up, the money came in on Hardy, I'm assuming. Yeah. I was going to say because of his name recognition, but maybe people must have known more than I did, because he ended up winning and ended up being, proving them right. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting story to finish. It's going to be an interesting story to follow, Greg Hardy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a name like that, to have him in MMA, I'm sure the UFC is pretty pleased to get a guy like that. Definitely a lot of controversy surrounding him. But overall for the card last night, I mean, you had one decision, you had four finishes. I mean, that Menifield, that was something, eh?
Yeah, that was wild. I mean, it was kind of a weird stoppage, watching it over a couple times. I would have liked to see that fight go a little bit longer. But regardless, I mean, Menifield, they told him, go get a couple more fights experience from his time on the Contender Series last year. Came back, and he won his fight by, I wouldn't say it was like a ridiculously early stoppage to the point that you wouldn't be able to give him a contract. It was just kind of an odd, 8-second sequence. But he went out there and bowled a guy over that was undefeated. That's the whole point of the show. So, he got the contract, and he'll be a nice addition to the UFC 205-pound roster. They can always use some prospects in that one.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, to your point there, kind of questionable decision whether or not the fight should have been over. I noticed it, too, in the Greg Hardy fight. He threw the right, and at the same time the ref was kind of running in, he threw another left. So a little bit of controversy there. But, yeah, I mean, I had heard, he knew the left kick was coming and countered it with the right. And, definitely a great TKO win. I mean, Boatwright, from my understanding, hadn't fought since 2016, so it was definitely a good win for Menifield.
Yeah, it was. Deshaun Boatwright was having some problems getting fights. I had spoken to him before the fight, and he said that he had a bunch of fights scheduled that, he got hurt once, and he dealt with an injury. And then the other thing he was running into was just opponents backing out the day of the fight, the day of the weigh-ins. He'd show up to the arena during fight night and there wouldn't be an opponent there, that type of a thing. So he's clearly a guy that is thought of as being a highly touted prospect in the Virginia regional scene. And Menifield just, beating anybody in 8 seconds. If he was fighting me, that would be impressive, to beat somebody in 8 seconds. So yeah, for him to do it against another scary opponent like Boatwright, impressive stuff. And he's put in his time. Watching the tape on him, but outside of Contender Series, he's an excellent prospect. So regardless of the finish, like, he's a guy that deserves to be in the UFC. He's of that level.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, as far as the whole Chris Curtis saga goes, is it definitely over? Will we see him back in the cage?
It's so tough, man. I think sometimes fighters say things in the spur of the moment. I'm sure a guy like him who, for well over a year, maybe even 2 years now, I thought he should be on the UFC roster. Proven himself time and time again at a high level, about as high of a regional level as you can get. He's an exciting fighter. He's not a boring guy, as we saw last night. He throws some pretty precise strikes and some funky stuff sometimes. So I couldn't explain to you why he wasn't signed to the UFC before this, just directly there. I think he's above the level of the Contender Series, above the point of the show. Like, he's a guy that's established, things like that. But yeah. That was just too bad to see him go out like that, or not really go out like that, but break his hand, and then, he said he's going to retire. So we'll see what happens. I'm kind of hoping that's just in the spur of the moment for my own selfish reasons. But if this is it for him, good for him. A lot of guys don't get to retire on top or at a moment that they, were on the up and up. A lot of these guys stick around too long. A lot of them, there's never really a happy ending in MMA, so I guess the fact that his ending's not perfect, but it's not one that ended up with him taking, excess amounts of damage or continuing to put his family through something that he doesn't want to put them through.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely a shame, seeing him get the highlight reel finish and follow it up with a retirement. As far as the Contender Series goes, I mean, you got a lot more LFA talent coming up, whether it's Jeff Hughes, their current heavyweight champ, among others. Nick Newell's another name that comes to mind, Ian Heinisch as well. So a lot to look forward to with Contender Series coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. I think those names you rattle off, Anthony Hernandez is the other, is a middleweight champion there as well. It's going to be good. I'm super excited. There's some that, you know, last year I thought there were a lot of unknowns. A lot of them proved to be pretty solid talent. This year, I think they kind of grabbed the more established guys, like the LFA champions, like you yeah. said. They have a lot of guys that were circled on my list, my, you know, preseason, pre-fight announcement, spread of fighters that I thought should be on the show. They got a lot of them right, so I'm super excited. I think we're going to see some high-level talent this season.
So transitioning from the Contender Series, I noticed you were live tweeting during the event from last Tuesday. What did you think of PFL 1?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I was so down on PFL going into this year. You know, I was expecting yeah. it to just go up in a cloud of flames or whatever you want to call it. But they ended up turning themselves around, at least in the idea. They have people excited. People talked about it. They have a Thursday night slot. Not competing with anybody else. They have a legitimate roster, and they seem, compared to WSOF, they seem a lot more organized. We'll see if that continues as we start getting into weird and wacky things that I'm sure will happen with the tournament. And then also the playoff format can pose some problems for any promotion that tries to put on a tournament. But overall, I thought that first event was great. You know, some exciting highlight reel knockouts, a fun comeback from Steven Seiler, and you know, I'm excited for their next event, which I believe is next week or the week after. And I'm super stoked for that one.
Yeah, I mean, Thursday night, it's a great night to have the fights. Definitely some impressive wins. Seiler's one of them. I thought the Tiller KO win was another one. You know, he competed for Bellator, Shamrock, and WSOF. They're definitely improving on the WSOF. I'm pretty sure they had what? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they had one other PFL event before this one.
Yeah, I think it was either one or two. They had one in – the one I'm thinking of was in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, exactly. The one with Ivanov. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think – I don't know why I was thinking they had one in Washington, in Everett, but I'm not sure. Yeah, it was either one or two. There weren't a lot of them.
No, exactly. But, yeah, no, first event, I mean, Francimar Barroso really impressed me. Seeing him live at UFC 220 against John Volante, he didn't look very good, but, I mean, moving up in a weight class, he looked great against the World Series of Fighting vet that he took on. Lance Palmer looked really good against Bekbulat Magomedov. And then, you know, your main event, that fight to me, I mean, others didn't seem to think it was going to be a tough one to call, but Andre Harrison unbeaten taking on Tershin. And I mean, Tershin had UFC experience and a great background as well. But yeah, great event. I know I had some issues trying to stream it, but that could have just been on my end as well.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. You know, I think that it's such an interesting idea to have, you know, one of their mottos for this season, or whatever you want to call it, one of their promo sayings is, you know, there are no prelims, and that's kind of an interesting, you know, idea that every single one of these fights is technically, you know, equal in the magnitude and the, you know, what's at stake. So it's a good concept, and I'll be definitely, you know, going forward, I'll definitely be keeping up with it, and I'll be interested to see how it plays out come, you know, around playoff time, the event before playoff time, and then once we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, it should be good. And they've got a great broadcasting team with Couture, Boss, Eve Edwards as well. Kind of interesting to see him jump ship and hit over there. And also, yeah, that the playoff format should be neat. I mean, it's a lot of money to be paying out to six, you know, champs in the future. And I think I read somewhere it could be between a $10 and $15 million loss in the first season. But, you know, with a playoff format like this, you might be able to capitalize on major sports fans, NFL fans, MLB fans, and the like. So yeah, it should be good going forward. And along with PFL, you've also got Bare Knuckle FC that just started, and they seem to also have a pretty good inaugural event.
Yeah, that was you know, I unfortunately didn't get to see it live, but the highlights that I saw afterwards and just everybody's responses to this this event, you know, the Bare Knuckle FC event was pretty crazy. I'm excited. You know, next event I'll definitely be I'll be watching that, and I'll see, you know, again, we'll see, these new ideas are finally coming out of the woodwork. We thought MMA you know, was pretty established at this point, and people are you know, finding new angles to keep us excited, whether it be, you know, Bare Knuckle Boxing or the tournament format for PFL. So I'm excited, man. I'm looking forward to both, and yeah, we'll just keep rolling on.
Yeah, for sure. Like to get your thoughts on UFC 225. A lot of good matchups on that card this past weekend. What's the one in your mind that probably sticks out the most?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, the main event and the co-main were both really good in their own rights. I mean, the main event was awesome. Like, such a good fight, a high level fight. You know, it kept people on the edge of their seats, and it very rarely, I think, in MMA do we get to see the actual number one and number two square off. You know, in their primes. You know, with a performance like that. So I was super excited to see that. And then the one that just I was just amazed by was Colby Covington. I picked RDA to win, and for Colby to just come out there and just completely stifle him like that, either beat him 3-2 pretty decisively or 4-1, whichever way you look at it, just pretty amazing stuff. I think him and Woodley is a hugely promotable fight for the UFC. You know, it's a matchup that can get fans, I think, excited about Tyron Woodley again. It seems like the public opinion on him right now is a little low compared to what it was in past years. So I think Covington's a perfect foil for him, and I think it's a great fight. And those were really the two. You know, when you go into a card, you always want the main and co-main to deliver, and sometimes they don't. And these two were just, I thought they both were great fights in their own right.
Yeah, I mean, I heard a lot of people say, you know, there were plenty of decisions on the card. To me, that didn't take away from the fights whatsoever. I mean, I was back home at probably 3:00 in the morning and couldn't have been happier. I mean, your main event was great. Co-main was great. I really like how Covington, you know, pushed the pace, got RDA into the clinch where RDA couldn't really do much. And yeah, I think I had it scored about 3-2 for Covington as well. You know, go down through the card. I mean, Holly Holm, she looked dynamic. Her striking was great. She was able to keep Anderson down on the canvas, won that fight. And it was one thing that I talked about with Ty O'Keefe on Tuesday's podcast, where you have Ty Tuivasa beating Arlovsky. You also have Blades, Overeem. What do you see the matchups looking like in the heavyweight division coming up?
Yeah, it will be interesting. You know, I saw Brett Okamoto from ESPN put out something yesterday saying that, you know, Blades would that the UFC was hoping to get Blades and Volkov in Russia, but a couple other reports since then have said that Blades actually suffered an injury in the fight against Overeem, so he's going to be on the shelf until probably around November is when he's looking to get back. So yeah, it will be interesting to see who they give him. I like the idea of Curtis Blades versus Alexander Volkov. I think it's a pretty clear cut number one contender fight. While Stipe, you know, we'll be fighting DC, and then we'll have obviously a recovery time after that. So that would be kind of the matchup if I was in my perfect world, what I would want to see. You know, as for Ty Tuivasa, there's a few options they can go. You know, Arlovsky was number 9, so really anybody above that would be a good matchup for him. I think maybe the winner of like Marcin Tybura versus Stefan Struve or somebody like, you know, one of those matchups. Right now, most of the heavyweight division is booked, so I guess we'll see what happens. But maybe even like the loser of like a Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis would be a good matchup. There's just a lot of things you can do with Tuivasa. There's no necessary reason to rush him. And judging by the way that he looked after the fight, I would say that he's probably going to take a little time off anyway. So I'm sure they'll give him another top 12 opponent, but you know, there's some options right now. We kind of have to see how things play out as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I figured actually, you know, Blades would take on the winner of Ngannou Lewis, and you know, in the chance that Ngannou wins, I guess it'd be a rematch. But yeah, Volkov would be a good matchup as well. But if Blades is on the shelf, then we'll see what happens. Your next UFC event isn't until June 23rd with Donald Cerrone and Leon Edwards. What do you think of that card?
You know, it's a classic card in Asia. You know, fight pass level fights. There's a couple good matchups on it. You know, I think that the main event is very intriguing. Cerrone versus Leon Edwards. Edwards finally getting his his big shot, his big opportunity to take out a big name. So I think he's earned that. That's a good matchup for him. But yeah, I think the co-main event's interesting too. The Tyson Pedro versus Ovin St. Preux. And then the rest of the card, you know, there's going to be some displays that are put on from some of the rising prospects in Asia and some of the other fighters throughout Europe. So, you know, it's a classic UFC fight pass, Asian oriented, you know, geared towards the Asian fans type of show. Peter Yan's debuting on that card, which is super exciting. If you don't know who he is yet, he's a guy that I think right now, and it could be, you know, a ranked bantamweight in the UFC if he had more fights. You know, people just have to see how good he is. It's not a matter of how good he is. So he's a guy that everybody should definitely watch out for. And yeah, there's a couple other fun fights on the card as well. I'll probably be one of the psychopaths who gets up early or goes to bed late, depending on which way you look at it, to watch this card. But not their best Asian show that they put on, but also not their worst. So MMA is MMA to me, and the UFC puts on the best shows in the world, so I can't really complain.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there as well. I see it starts at 10 o'clock Eastern that Saturday morning, or 10 p.m., sorry. Geez, yeah, 10 p.m. Eastern, so it's a later one. Yeah, you mentioned Peter Yan as well. A lot of fans of the show follow ACB as well, so they're quite familiar with Yan. You've also got Jake Matthews on the card. Yeah, it's a pretty good fight pass card. And as well, ACB, you got the event there on Saturday from Brisbane, ACB 88. Might as well keep it moving. UFC 226, that's the next big event. You know, we've seen some smaller fight night cards, but back into another big pay-per-view. You got two belts on the line, and a lot of great matchups. I mean, the whole card is just totally stacked.
Yeah, it's just amazing, man. Looking at that main card, not only do they have the talent on this card, but the fighters that are in it are, you know, just have the reputations as being so exciting. It's very rare that we get both those elements. Like, sometimes we'll get, you know, really stacked cards, but the matchups, you say, okay, like, you know, this could be one of those fights that's kind of slower or, you know, very calculated. And then sometimes you get, oh, this card doesn't have the name recognition, but they put all these really violent fighters against each other, so that could be exciting. And then this is the best of both worlds. I mean, we have guys that very, very, very rarely go out and have boring fights. We have them all pinned against each other, so that's just it's just amazing, man. The depth of the card is great too. We got fights like Rafael Assuncao versus Rob Font on the prelims. We have, you know, Riancio Medeiros, Mike Perry, Gilbert Burns to Daniel Hooker. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Every single fight is interesting in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, lowest fight that I'm looking at on your site there, Tapology, Groovy Lando Venata and Jakar Close. I mean, just blows everything out of the water. Definitely a can't miss, and that's on the 7th of July. What are your thoughts right now, as of today, on the main event with Stipe and DC?
Oh, it's great. You know, I think this is one of the few. I'm not a huge fan of like super fights. I think they should only be used in like certain instances where one of the fighters runs out of contenders. And I feel like DC's kind of at that point. You know, who the Gustafson fight they could do again. You know, the Jones fight if he got cleared they could do again. But I feel like that division as of right now is a little stalled. So what better way to have everybody, all the contenders, you know, kind of that are just in a big group right now, have them figure out who's on top while DC goes and does this. I know it slows the heavyweight division down a little bit, but I think, you know, DC's kind of earned this. I'm completely cool with this super fight. I cannot complain about it. I just think it's a phenomenal matchup. And if DC could beat Stipe Miocic, you know, man, that's just like out of this world. But I think Stipe Miocic's in his really, really in his prime right now. I think the fact that he's so much bigger than DC is a problem. I know DC in the past hasn't really had issues with being an undersized heavyweight, but I just think Miocic is not the guy that you want to face right now. I think that he's making his case for being the best heavyweight of all time, and I think he's just on a roll. I think Stipe will get it done inside the distance, but man, I'm super excited for that fight. Just that whole card is just, like I said, amazing.
Yeah, hopefully we're able to see a lot of action out of those two. I mean, stylistically, they're somewhat similar. I mean, DC, if he can take Stipe down, it's not going to be like when he fought Uzdemir, but should be a great matchup. And then, I mean, your co-main as well, bless Max Holloway and Brian Ortega. I mean, fireworks there.
Yeah, that's another phenomenal matchup. You know, both these guys are on just such roles in the UFC. You know, Ortega's 14-0 with the 1-0 contest, and Holloway's on, I don't even remember at this point. He's just won so many fights that I forgot the stat. I think it's like 12 in a row or something. 12 fights in a row. So you got a 14-0 guy versus, you know, a guy that went 12-0 in his last 12 fights. Like, this is just, there's not many cards, not many events that I can remember that had as good of a co-main event as this. So super, super stoked for that one. And, I can't wait to see what happens come fight night.
Yeah, a lot of great fights coming up. Don't have another UFC card for another couple of weeks. I'm sure you'll be breaking news from now to then. So where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys can find me on Twitter at MMA_Kings. You can also see my work that I'm putting up on MMAtoday.com. It's actually MMA-today.com. be putting out a bunch of contender series pieces on the fighters for the next few weeks, and actually the whole series itself. And then you can also see my work on Flow Combat. I do some type of prospect reports for them. I do fight roundup and like fight announcement roundups. And then I'll be starting a new series on their site as well with kind of more in-depth analyses of fighters that the UFC should sign. Then also you can see, you guys can visit my site that I just started working for, Tapology. It's the biggest MMA database in the world. Gets updated by the minute. Super stoked to be on board with those guys. And that's pretty much it for now, man. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm sure I'll be on again. And it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Really great having Nolan on. I mean, he's so insightful. He's learned so much coming up through MMA, and you see him on Twitter all the time breaking, the latest news, whether it's fights for the UFC, following a lot of up and coming prospects as well. So like to take this time now to preview some of the fights this weekend. Little bit of news for us here at Fight Night Picks. I'm going to be covering NEF 34, home of the Brave, from Portland, Maine, on Saturday at 7 o'clock Eastern. I'll be there live tweeting, as well as writing some content for the website at fightnightpicks.net. So there's three professional fights on the card. There's also two amateur title fights. The bantamweight and welterweight belts are on the line. So really exciting stuff. First event I'm going to be covering live for Fight Night Picks. And really excited to be going. Also coming up this weekend, you've got M1 Global Challenge 94 coming at you from Orenburg, Russia. That one's on Friday. It'll be broadcast on the East Coast Friday afternoon, so you can catch that there. Main event on the cards for their lightweight title. It's between 22 and 10, Artem Damkovsky, and he's taking on the champ, who's 15 and 2, Demir Ismagulov. So Damkovsky, he's won 3 in a row. He's got 12 decisions on his record out of the 22 wins, and he hasn't fought in a little over a year. And Ismagulov, he's on a 10-fight win streak. He's been much more active fighting this spring. He fought at M188 in February. Pick Ismagulov to get the win in that fight. Should be a good main event for the M1 Global Challenge 94 card. I mean, not as many big names as there was at M1 Global Challenge 93. You had Diesel Joe Riggs on that card, as well as Alexander Shlemenko, but still a good card nonetheless. Your co-main, it's a welterweight bout between 18 and 4 Georgian fighter Raul Tutarauli, and he's taken on 5-0 Roman Bogatov. Tutarauli, he was on an 8-fight win streak. He lost his last bout. Bogatov, he's fought as recently as March, and he's got 3 submission wins out of his 5 total, but it's a tough fight to call. Bogatov's obviously unbeaten, but Tutarauli, he's got 13 knockout wins, and he's only been submitted once, and he's got 22 pro fights. He's only 26 years old, and Bogatov's 27, so in that fight, take Tutarauli to win. And I mean, he's a really interesting fighter. You could see him doing big things in possibly other leagues and getting more exposure. So have an eye on Tutarauli in that fight. This weekend, you've also got ACB 88 from Brisbane, Australia on Saturday. Main event was slated between UFC vets Thiago Silva and Chris Camozzi, but I read that Silva ran into some visa issues and was forced to pull out. So ACB tried to find a replacement for Camozzi, but wasn't able to find him one there. This is going to be his ACB debut coming over from the UFC. So the new main event's between Ultimate Fighter Season 17 contestant. He's 6'6". He's actually competing at light heavyweight in this fight. It's 14-5, big slow, Luke Barnett, taking on 15-6-1, Karol Cielinski. I mean, Cielinski's on a 4-fight win streak. He's got a decision win over UFC vet Vinny Magalhães. And Barnett, he's 3-2 in his last 5, but he's got 8 knockout wins. He's only been finished once. So take Luke Barnett to get the win, and it should be a great main event for ACB. You've also got former Bellator and UFC star. I mean, the guy's only 26 years old. He went 1-4 in the UFC. It's 23-7, Marcin Held, and he's taken on 16-6, Callum Potter. And I don't know what the odds are on this fight, but I would assume maybe Held would be the favorite. Potter's the Aussie, and he's fighting at home. But, like I said, Held, he went 1-3 in the UFC, lost to Diego Sanchez, lost to Joe Lozon. And, I mean, those were fights when these guys were on the decline. And he lost to Demir Hadzovic as well. But he won his last fight against Nazar Haqparast, who I've seen the UFC try and push him lately. So it was kind of strange to see Marcin Held leave the UFC. I saw he had some grappling matches in Quintet. But taking on Callum Potter, Potter's on an 8-fight win streak, all of them by finishes. He's the current Hex Fighting Series lightweight champ. And, I mean, I expect Potter to just keep on rolling. I mean, he's taken on his toughest opponent to date. If you have a look at his record, he also fought Jake Matthews at one point, but it was really early on in his career. So expect Potter to win the fight. It should be a really good fight. I mean, Held's first fight in ACB. And, yeah, it's a good card. I mean, also on the card, you've got Canadian. You know, he was interviewed on our podcast. 14-4 Tanner Boser. He's taking on UFC vet Chase Gormley. Expect Tanner to get the win there. I think he's going to, you know, climb to the top of the ACB heavyweight ranks. He's ranked 3 right now. And hopefully he's able to compete for the ACB heavyweight title later on, possibly this year, avenging his loss to the champ Vakayev. You know, ACB's got a really stacked heavyweight division. I see now that Daniel Malanchuk that fought in the UFC is going to be fighting at ACB 91 in England. And also on that card is the return of One Punch Brad Pickett. He just signed a multi-fight deal with ACB. So really exciting stuff for the promotion. And great to see Brad Pickett back in the cage. Also this weekend, you get Cage Warriors 94 from Antwerp, Belgium. There's not too many big names on the card, but the main event is for the vacant bantamweight belt. It's between 7-1, Brian Bouland, and he's taking on 5-0, Ilya Topuria. You know, Topuria, not a familiar name, I guess, but all of his 5 wins have come by submission. And Bouland last fought at Cage Warriors 91, and he beat Josh Reed by knockout. He was, you know, probably a 2-1 underdog in that fight. And he got caught in a nasty kind of guillotine. Reed had him in there for a long time, but his arms burn out. And Reed has 4 submission wins on his pro record. But Reed's arms kind of burn out. Bouland was able to kind of get into the stack guard, threw a hard punch, and then kind of followed it up from the side and landed another one that totally knocked him out cold. So Bouland with a bit of a streak, but at the same time, Topuria hasn't lost as a pro, and I expect him to be, you know, better than Reed. Taking on Bouland, and so take Topuria in that fight to get the win. So I'd like to thank our sponsors. You know, we're brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to their website, firstrow.ca. You know, they've got MMA autographs, Roland Delorme on there, some wrestling memorabilia, hockey cards. I mean, the list goes on and on. They've got tons of good rookie cards. I mean, I saw a Cody Bellinger rookie card over there when I was on there today. They've got Bret Hart autographs, Ron Simmons autographs. The list goes on. Lots of sports collectibles as well as the autographs. So for our listeners, enter the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. And to our American listeners, you know, keep it in mind, the prices on the site are in Canadian dollars. So you're going to be saving roughly 25% by ordering from firstrow.ca. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. I've had a Sisu Mouthguard for a number of years now, and they're proud to announce that they just formed a partnership with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation in the States. So ALSF, they're a national childhood cancer foundation. They're dedicated to raising funds and research and new treatments and cures for children battling cancer. So, you know, from this year until next, June 2018 to 2019, every yellow mouthguard purchase from their website will result in a 10% donation to that foundation. So you got to go on their website, sisuguard.com. You can still use the promo code FNP10. You'll be saving 10% on your purchase. But at the same time, you're going to be helping out Bucks' Lemonade Stand Fund. So head on over to their website. You know, the yellow mouth guards are available in the Aero style and also the Junior styles. And yeah, really great by Sisu. So head on over to their website, SISU Guard, promo code FNP10. All right, so now it's about time for our interview with Canadian MMA journalist James Lynch. You can catch his work on Sports Illustrated MMA, writes for Fightful, has things on Flow Combat, also MMA Odds Breaker, and he's one of the hosts of the Parting Shot podcast. So here's the interview with James. Yeah, sounds good. So I guess to start, how did you get your start in MMA journalism?
Oh man, it's we gotta go way back here. We'll go about 10 years. So I mean, for me, basically, when I always wanted to be a broadcaster. That was sort of my you know, end goal. I went to school for broadcasting. I also went to school for communications, but the plan was to always be a broadcaster, but not an MMA broadcaster. I wanted to be a hockey broadcaster, and then I sort of fell in love with mixed martial arts when I was in college, or when I was in university, I should say, and I decided to go that route, and basically the first exposure I got to sort of working in MMA media was back in 2008 when I worked at the Fight Network. I just happened to be in Toronto, and they had this, you know, 24-hour sports network, and I interned there, and I started off as an editor, and I worked my way up to being a producer, and you know, did a bit of reporting, and that's sort of where it began. And then, you know, as far as my day job went, because that was my day job for a while, and then I left to go to TSN. I worked there for a few years. I then went to Discovery Channel, and then I went to another channel as well, where I did just basically I was a coordinator for them. And at that point, when I was kind of out of sports, I just started doing MMA on the side, so I became sort of a freelancer, just doing a little bit here and there. It started when I was at Discovery Channel. I was still doing articles for TSN at the time. I wasn't getting paid. I was just doing it to, you know, stay relevant and you know, to sort of cover the sport and everything. And from there, that led to me doing a podcast and that I was doing for free for a bit, and then the podcast got picked up by a website called MMA Oddsbreaker. And once that started happening, I started to write for MMA Oddsbreaker, and that's sort of where things took off, because it was there, once I saw, like, hey, I can actually get paid to do this, I ended up just, you know, running with it, and it got to the point where initially I was just doing audio interviews and doing write-ups, and then I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm not a great writer, like, I definitely am better suited for being on camera, so I started to do video interviews, and so I just sort of progressed from there to the point of where last October, when I became a father for the first time, I quit my day job and I decided to do this full time. So that's how we're here today.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen you, whether it's on YouTube or on Twitter. You do a ton of those video interviews, and they're great. And at the same time, you've also got the Parting Shot podcast, you and Adam Martin, and that's a hit too. So must be pretty cool having dipping your hand in a whole lot of different things.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. You know, I'm doing things sort of untraditionally, I should say, as far as people who do this full time. You know, a lot of the people who do this full time work for one outlet. You know, your Ariel Helwanis, your, you know, John Morgans, all these people who do this full time, they work for one outlet and they get a salary and everything else. I don't do that. I'm the hustler. So I work for multiple sites. I provide multiple content to multiple sites, and I like it that way. You know, if I ever lose one of my jobs, I've still got seven other websites that are going to pay me. So I just embrace the grind, and I like how things are. And the best part is too, like, I really kind of, you know, make my own schedule. I get to pick when I want to do interviews. You know, I get to pick, you know, what my days off are. So it's good. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I don't think I'm going to try and do this as long as I can, because I don't think I'll ever go back to working in a corporate world.
No, I mean, that's awesome. It's a really great plan. And you're based in Canada too, which is great. I'm here on the East Coast in Fredericton, and you're in what, Toronto area?
I am in the Toronto area, yeah, but originally from Vancouver. I was born and raised in a little suburb called Tawasin, which is just outside of Richmond. And I was born and raised there, and then it was basically I made my trek to Ontario when I went to university, and then I just kind of stayed. I was kind of telling you before, when I worked in the television industry previously, but the first job I ever had in TV was actually an internship at The Score, if you remember that network that was around.
Yeah.
So I just ended up staying. The plan was not to stay in Toronto this long. I mean, it's been 10 years now, but yeah, it's I'm still here. So it's you know, could be worse, but it's been great.
Yeah, there's always a lot going on in Toronto, and The Score, I mean, they've still got the app, and that's my go-to sports app still, so they're still kicking a little bit. But yeah, I mean,
I was going to say, yeah, you're right, like, they're still taking care of business as far as, the app. I think they just sold the TV side to Sportsnet, and then the app is its own thing, and it was one of a kind at the time, and it's still the best app, I think, out there for sports.
Yeah, for sure, and I mean, just to keep it rolling with the Canadian content, I mean, we've seen an increase in new Canadian talent in MMA recently. I mean, OAM's come out as kind of a breakout star, but you've also got women's MMA champs and major organizations. You've got Julia Budd and Bellator, Sarah Kaufman and Invicta. And then later on this summer, you've also got the UFC Calgary card. I mean, it's totally stacked. There's 12 fights on there so far. Do you think they're going to add more local talent on that card?
I'm not sure. I've heard rumblings that they might add a 13th fight to that card, but I'm not entirely sure if it'll be a local one or what's sort of happening. I did hear about a rumored matchup that was supposed to take place, but it sounds like that's not happening now, involving a Canadian fighter. I think the card's pretty much set. But keep your eyes out, because there may be a situation where a short notice opportunity comes about here with one of these fights. But it's a great card, and you know, they deserve it. Calgary got screwed the last time they had a card here years ago, so it's good to see them coming back with a big, big, big step. stacked card like this.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's good to see a return of MMA in Alberta as well. I mean, there was a bit of a hiatus there. But yeah, you've got Eddie Alvarez, Poirier, Aldo Stevens, Jacek Torres. Like, I mean, it is a totally stacked card as well. There's a lot of Canadian talent on there. Like I mentioned, OAM, Jordan Meehan. It's stacked.
Yeah, no, it really is. The guy I'm going to be keeping an eye on that card is Hakeem Dawodu. You know, if you remember, he was highly touted, signed to the UFC, and he had probably one of the worst UFC debuts in recent memory. He was finished in the first round. Hakeem's from Calgary. This fight's in Calgary. He's going to put on a show in this fight. I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can really see from Hakeem in this fight. He's taking on a tough guy in Austin Arnett, but, man, I'm excited about the ceiling on this guy. He's still relatively young, and, you know, he's an entertaining fighter. And, you know, you look at prospects, I mean, he's the best one they have right now in the UFC as far as, you know, up-and-comers. You mentioned Olivier, but at this point, I'd almost consider him a bit of a veteran, just yeah, the fact he's been in the UFC for a while. But I don't know if you heard the news just before I came on here. Jeremy Kennedy has left the UFC. I don't know if you heard that.
No, I didn't hear that. No, news to me.
Yeah, so Jeremy Kennedy has signed with Brave, which is you know, promotion that does a lot of cards overseas. They just had one in Ireland last Saturday. And I guess Jeremy, you know, his contract was up. He had four fights with the UFC. And he has left, and I am going to try and talk to Jeremy this weekend, but I'd be willing to bet the UFC probably lowballed him. And he said, you know what? I'm going to get paid more money going fighting somewhere else, so I'm going to go take my talents elsewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, I really like what Brave's been able to do recently. I mean, that first card, their first card in Europe, they had a stacked one there, and they seem to be growing quite a bit. Same thing with ACB. I mean, I know you've interviewed him a number of times, and I had Tanner Bowser on there last week. It'd be interesting to see whether or not he fights out his ACB contract and ends up in the UFC, or he stays with ACB. I know last week when I talked to him, his intentions are to stay in ACB and possibly win the heavyweight title there, and I think he has a good shot at it as well. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good Canadian talent. There's a lot of talent in Alberta as well. I mean, it could be possible that we see some of those guys like Teddy Ash, Jesse Arnett, among others, in our new UFC Moncton card. I know a lot of people are pretty surprised that the UFC was coming back to the Maritimes. I mean, it's always great for myself. We had a card here last year in Halifax, but nothing's been announced yet. No matchups. Are there any fights that you could see ending up on this card?
That's a great question. You know, immediately my first thought is, you know, someone like Jason Sago, but Jason was released from the UFC. I don't know if a lot of people know that. He's now focusing on his gym. He's let go just after, you know, I think two losses.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't really anyone that stands out. I mean, Gavin Tucker's got to be a lock for that card, I would think, just, you know, being sort of a close guy. He hasn't fought in a while, and he wasn't put on the Calgary card, so that makes me think he probably will be on that card. But other than that, I mean, it's tough as far as, you know, Maritime guys, you know, getting out there. The obvious choice is a guy that I don't know if you're familiar with, Christian Savoie.
Yeah.
He was actually offered a spot on the Contender Series, but he had a broken hand, so he was unable to take that opportunity. And Christian just signed with Sucker Punch Entertainment, which is a management group that Max Holloway is part of, and a lot of other really big-name fighters. So I think it's very possible you could see Christian on that card, you know, as someone who's, you know, from, you know, the Maritimes as well. And I think he's sort of a slam dunk for that, because he's also a middleweight, which is a division right now that could use some new talent.
Yeah, I mean, 6-0 right now, just recently competed for Elite One in April, and he's middleweight champ there. And I saw a column, yeah, by Nolan King on Flow Combat that he got offered that spot on the Contender Series but couldn't take it. Another couple of names that I was thinking of, I had an interview with D. Logue on Tuesday. He's 9-0 amateur and pro. He's a lightweight champ here. Also 6'2", so pretty tall for that division. And there's also Sean Wallace from Pointe du Chien, New Brunswick. Fights out of Prince Edward Island. He's 7-1 as a pro, but he's also got a fight book for July in Burlington. So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of names. There's a lot of Canadian names that are still out there. I was thinking Eamon Zahabi. I mean, he competed in Halifax. You got to kind of think that Elias Theodorou, he competed there recently in Liverpool, maybe him as well. I don't know if you'd know, but Misha Serkinov, what's his status right now?
I have no idea what's going on with him, but he is in desperate need of a win, and I don't know what the UFC is going to do with him at this point, because he's had two really disappointing fights. He granted, you know, tough competition to title challengers that he fought. But, you know, I don't know what the UFC does with him at this point, because his hype train's completely derailed at this point. But yeah, I imagine he might get put on that card. You know, they seem to like to put some Canadian talent on there. But like you mentioned, not a lot of, you know, Maritimers or East Coasters that that really sort of stand out. And you mentioned Sean Wallace there. I'm actually going to that card in Burlington. It's actually next weekend. He's fighting Adam Asenza for the lightweight title. So, and I'm actually talking to Sean on Saturday, so obviously I'm going to bring that up about the Moncton card. But you never know. I mean, a lot of times when you see fighters get signed, it's not necessarily the best fighter. It's the fighter that, you know, might have might be a local draw or might be someone that the scenario fits. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, you mentioned Jesse Arnett. I've been the biggest Jesse Arnett supporter over the last couple of years. I thought when he beat Roland Delorme years ago, he should have been in the UFC. Yeah. But, I think he's got to be, at the very least, he's got to get another offer. He had an offer at UFC 220. But unfortunately, he was unable to get out of his contract at TKO. So hopefully now, I talked to him recently. He is now free out of his contract. So if he wants to go and take a short notice opportunity, he has that chance. But yeah, Jesse's the guy. I think if you're looking at anyone in Canada right now who deserves a shot in the UFC at 10 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be awesome to see him compete here in Moncton. And like you had mentioned earlier with Gavin Tucker, and you said usually they sign some local talent. I mean, in UFC Chile, they signed local talent. It didn't seem to work out for them in that main card, but when they were here in Halifax last year, Gavin Tucker lit it up, and I don't think I've heard a louder crowd. I mean, geez, that was great. But coming off a tough loss against Rick Glenn, trains out of Titans MMA with TJ Grant. So yeah, it'd be great to see him back in the cage.
Yeah, he's had a long layoff, and I know he spent some time at TriStar, hopefully you see him back in there, because, again, he had a lot of momentum, too, and then Rick Glenn just, you know, he basically outclassed him. I mean, there's no other way to look at it, so I'm curious to see how Gavin bounces back from this, you know, first professional loss, so for him, it's going to be crucial in his career.
Yeah, for sure. So, we don't have the UFC for another few weeks. We also don't have a Bellator event for the next few weeks. What do you plan on watching this weekend?
This weekend I might actually take off because I don't get many of these weekends to sort of just put my feet up and not have to worry about MMA. We just had Contender Series on Tuesday, so I was watching that. I'm probably going to just, because, I mean, even if you look at, like, Access TV, they have the CES card, but that's tomorrow night, so yeah. I don't think there's much going on Saturday as far as cards or whatever, so I'm going to use that to recharge the batteries and go full force for the, you know, the Contender Series on Tuesday, and then you have the Singapore card, and then, you know, sooner or later, it's going to be, you know, the International Fight Week, which I'm actually going to be going to and covering live. So I got to sort of, get amped up for that and get all my ducks in a row before that card happens.
Yeah, I saw you announce that on Twitter. Congrats there. That should be great. As far as this weekend goes, yeah, you're right. The only events I kind of have on my radar right now, there's M1 on Friday, and then you also have ACB on Saturday. You get to watch Tanner Boser compete. And as well, they lost their main event, whether it was today or yesterday. So co-main moves up to main, but yeah, not a whole lot going on this weekend. And I mean, in boxing, you've got Errol Spence Jr. as well, if you follow that, but
Yeah, I've read about that.
Exactly. No, it was great having you on. Where can people find you?
First off, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I always love talking fights, and especially with a fellow Canadian. I think one of the things you'll notice north of the border, if anyone's listening to this that's outside of Canada, we all get along, we all help each other out. I mean, I'm friends with pretty much all the Canadian media, and you know, a lot of us are lucky enough to be here in Toronto, so we actually get together for drinks and stuff, so it's great to talk to a fellow Canuck. But your listeners can follow me on Twitter at Lynch on Sports. I post all my content on there, and if you want to find all my interviews, I put them in one spot. I have the, you know, playlists and everything. That is youtube.com/LynchOnSports, and thanks so much for the time, man, and if you want me on anytime, just hit me up on Twitter. It's great to be on.
Great. Thanks so much, James. Awesome stuff from James. Really like to thank him again for coming on the podcast. It's great to get that Canadian perspective on MMA, and he's always busy and up to something, so you can check him out on his YouTube page, like he said. But yeah, writes for all different sorts of websites, and busy guy for sure. So lastly, don't forget this weekend, you've also got the Errol Spence Jr. fight. He's defending his IBF welterweight bout against mandatory challenger Carlos Ocampo. You know, Spence, he's 23-0. He's got 20 knockouts on his record, and expect the same thing on Saturday night at 9 o'clock. That fight's coming at you from Frisco, Texas on Showtime. So that just about does us for episode 19 of the podcast. I'd like to thank, you know, Nolan King as well as James Lynch for coming on. It was great to have their takes. Also like to thank First Row Collectibles and Sisu Mouthguards. Like I said, Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. Be really great if we could get some donations for them. And we'll be back again on Monday I'll be live from the NEF fights, NEF 34 from Portland, Maine. And you can check out my stuff on at Fight Night Picks on Twitter, Fight Night Picks on Facebook, as well as the website, fightnightpicks.net. I'll have some articles on there as well. So we'll be back again on Monday, and I've also got a really big guest to announce. So see you again on Monday.